I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is a Roifield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing for the singing of our national anthem.
Brexit means Brexit.
My administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country.
Hello and welcome to Mid-Atlantic, the show where we look at the news and the views from one side of the Atlantic from the perspective of the other. I am a depressed, frustrated and angry Roifield Brown in the Bay Area in the United States. And today I'm joined by Emma Burnell. There's no sobriquet to go with her this week because I'm just too frustrated to even think of one, but she's in London. And also we're joined by Doug Levy in Marin County. I've been saying in the North Bay, I've been getting it wrong, haven't I, Doug?
Marin is North Bay, so you are not incorrect.
Oh, okay. Well, somebody did school me on that some time ago and say the North Bay was like was further north. But anyway, whatevs. Say hello, folks.
Hello,
hi,
folks.
Listener Philip has responded to Ben Jacobs' call on last week's show regarding Jewish allegiance to Israel and Zionism.
Roifield, I enjoyed your last episode, and I really appreciated Emma Burnell's response to the caller, Ben. Someone whose views I obviously disagree very strongly with. I would like to point out that the vast majority of American Jews, at least according to surveys, are very supportive of Israel, irrespective of their views about Israeli government policy. I think Emma Burnell said, much more eloquently than I could, the situation with anti-Semitism in England, that this is not a smear. This is a real problem within the British Labour Party, and a problem within the Tories, just as in the United States, it's a problem on both the far left and on the far right.
I don't know how many more calls we're actually going to get on the, in this long-running thread, which all stemmed from the Chris Williamson interview. But if you would like to respond to anything that you hear on the show, quite simply go into midatlanticshow.com and you'll see a little tab over on the right that is a SpeakPipe app. And basically you hit that and you can record an up to a 2-minute message. What we're trying to do is to try and foster and build a community of like-minded people throughout the world who like to comment on and have ideas on progressive politics. Why don't you join us by going on to midatlanticshow.com and hitting that SpeakPipe app. So a few episodes ago, we did a special on the Canadian election, which resulted in a hung parliament, but with Justin Trudeau leading a minority government. Here is Laura on the development in Canadian politics this week.
Canadians were shocked on hearing the news that Conservative Party leader Andrew Scheer had decided to resign. He had been in a battle to keep his job as leader of the party after the fall election that saw the Trudeau Liberals get re-elected with a minority. And part of what complicated matters was that Andrew Scheer, underneath his leadership, actually managed to get the popular vote and to grow the Conservative caucus by quite a number of seats. So he had technically a good election result, But of course, it wasn't enough to oust Trudeau. And conservatives are known in Canada for their politics of not waiting around too long for their leaders to get it right. In fact, often they don't bother with the stabbing from the back. They come right at you from the front. And we've seen examples in the past where they don't take well to not winning an election, even if the results are technically good from the point of view of gaining seats or gaining votes. So Andrew Scheer was already in jeopardy. It was as though there was a sort of Damocles hanging over his leadership. But what was so shocking was the timing, because most people thought, and even his past statements said, that he was going to endure a leadership review in the spring. So when he announced that he was leaving, it was on the same day that there was an article that came out saying that he had used the Conservative Party's funds for his children's private school. And while some people came out to justify that, there were other stories coming out that people within the party did not know that he was doing that. So it looked as though the timing of that new scandal and his resignation were more than coincidental. There are other theories, of course, that the story was known for a while, but it was revealed to the media to push and force his hand to resign. Whatever caused him to do it, ultimately what has happened is that there has been an incredible list of names that have been put forward. People are starting to speculate on who could take up the federal leadership. There are a lot of good quality candidates, and there seems to be an overriding assessment that because Andrew Scheer was not from an urban area, he just simply couldn't relate or connect with the large urban votes in the Toronto area, the GTA, and because he was in many ways promoting some social conservatism, some values that were antithetical to modern Canada.
As always, a comprehensive roundup of the movements in Canadian politics. So Laura Babcock, as always, I doff my cap and salute you for your encyclopedic knowledge of all things going on in the frozen north.
Yeah, absolutely. I learn so much every time Laura's on the show.
She is very, very, very good. In a week that has seen England and Scotland both vote for nationalist parties, we ask, where does the 2019 election take the UK and left-wing politics in general?
This One Nation Conservative government has been given a powerful new mandate.
This is obviously a very disappointing night for the Labour Party.
Tonight is terrible. It's horrendous. It's heartbreaking.
Jo Swinson has lost her seat in Dunbartonshire East to the Scottish National Party.
The most disastrous result for the Labour Party. The worst result since 1935.
The Conservatives on 368 seats and Labour way down on 191.
Boris Johnson has gambled and won.
This result is a catastrophe for you, Jeremy Corbyn, and the Labour Party.
Emma, yep. The Tories now have a majority of 80. Just what happened last night?
I mean, everything happened last night, basically. Everything that could possibly have gone wrong for the Labour Party went wrong for the Labour Party. The number one issue on the doorsteps, according to all polling, and all anecdotal data, is that Corbyn just was completely disliked. And that factored in with Brexit, which it's a really complicated one, because we probably would have lost more seats had we not taken a Remain position, because more of our voters would have abandoned us, because more Labour voters are Remain than Leave. We still lost the difference-making number of voters who were Leave voters in Labour heartlands, who combined their distrust and dislike of Jeremy Corbyn with their upset over Labour's position on the Brexit. And what happened was that we've got a very right-wing Tory government.
Normally, when political leaders leave parties into stunning electoral defeats, they go immediately. Why won't Corbyn go right now?
You can ask different people and they'll give you a different answer. My interpretation is that he wants to oversee both the post-mortem and the next leadership contest in order to put his thumb on the scale and make sure that, you know, his people win it and continue to run the Labour Party into the ground.
Doug, what can, if anything at all, what can the Democrats take from this election? What will this inform us about the runners and riders in the Democratic presidential primary race? Is this a lesson to say your Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are too left-wing, et cetera, et cetera? Is there anything which you Americans can take from this drubbing that the Labour Party has just experienced in the UK election?
If I'm understanding the polling data correctly, this is further evidence that people are perfectly comfortable voting against their actual interests and based more on gut feeling and personality. And I think the American politicians must pay attention, because this does not bode well for the United States. We saw 63 million people vote against their interests for the most part in 2016. And I'm honestly very nervous about the potential for a disaster of our own following the same model that Britain has demonstrated.
Emma, there was some talk. We had Hugh Grant. There were one or two different tactical voting organizations. What happened to tactical voting yesterday?
I think it probably had an impact, but not a very big impact. So it may have saved some Labour MPs, which, when you think about that, and the drubbing that Labour got, the worst since 1935, is a terrifying thought. On the other hand, I mean, say, take, for example, Canterbury, a seat that I have particular interest in. Rosie Duffy would almost certainly won through tactical and retained her seat, and in fact increased her majority through tactical voting. But it just wasn't enough. Labour were not an attractive enough alternative for people to be able to hold their nose and vote for them.
And there were different currents, weren't there? If there's a crumb of any kind of good news for the Labour Party, it is that the national trend was bucked not only in London, but also in the large cities, isn't it?
Well, yes. And that is now where Labour lives. But that in itself is a concern, because that means that the people who now represent Labour represent those cities to the large extent. I mean, there are obvious alternatives. And that's a bubble. And it's a bubble that Labour have lived in too comfortably for too long.
Mm. So is modern left-wing ideology too metropolitan and elitist?
Well, I mean, elitist, yes, to an extent. I mean, if you look at the people who are actually in charge, most of them are privately educated. Most of them are very posh. They're so posh they make me feel common, and I'm perfectly middle class. In the British way, not in the American way. I never understand the difference. But the metropolitan thing is a concern to me, because that language denies the poverty that lives in cities. And we just end up talking about poor white people in towns. And as someone was saying to me last night, there is a strong thread growing that just denies that there is poverty in the cities, and or that black people have a right to an equal right to representation. And actually, we should just be shutting up and talking about, you know, the white vote.
It's an interesting point. And I'm going to come back onto this for you, Doug, to talk about the Democrats. But on that point, though, about people of colour, don't we have, is it now like 65 members or 64 or 65 members of Parliament who are going to be people of colour? So that seems to be somewhat at variance with what you're saying. We can definitely vote in Muslim, Pakistani, Afro-Caribbean MPs ad nauseam. You know, a tenth are going to be from ethnic minorities, which is not too dissimilar to where they sit in the population of the UK as a whole. But that seems to be flying in the face of what you're saying, though, Emma.
we can elect them within our parties, far more than women, frankly, sometimes.
Record amount of women on this intake. It is just over a third of all MPs, and more than 50% of Labour MPs will be female, which I saw that statistic and I was shocked.
I mean, yes, but that's because we lost so many MPs. We lost an awful lot of good women MPs. A lot of people who were lost were, you know, good, competent women. A lot of people who stayed in were incompetent men. But it's not, there's a difference, I think, between those people that are chosen by the parties to represent them and those people whose voices are heard. And that's where this meta-narrative is worrying me.
Okay, Doug, let's come back over to you in the good old US of A. Democrats, some of the Democratic presidential hopefuls, some of the bricks thrown at them is that they are too left-wing. They're not talking about bread-and-butter issues that regular Americans, which means in the middle of America, basically chime with. And the Democratic Party has been called coastal and elitist for at least 10, 15 years. Again, looking at what's happened to the Labour Party in the UK, should there be a course correction? Should we be looking at Uncle Joe, after all, somebody who the pollsters tell us that has an appeal to middle America, and stop this flirtation with your Elizabeth Warrens and your Bernie Sanderses?
I think part of the issue is that I attribute a lot of it just to fundamental communications flaws. I mean, if you look at what Hillary Clinton was actually campaigning on, her policy proposals were absolutely aimed at helping the middle class across the country. And she had very well-developed proposals, well-thought-out policy proposals to address things like the coal miners and factory workers who were being displaced. But
no charisma, though, Doug.
Right, exactly.
She didn't, you know,
she did not connect with those voters. That's a huge problem. Biden has the advantage of already being relatively established with those voters. You know, he's kind of the stereotypical Joe Sixpack in a lot of ways. But I think he's going to have, I mean, he's having other issues that I think are going to undercut him. You know, when you talk about Warren and Sanders, I don't know how much of it is because they are considered too left-wing, but I do think the fact that they are associated with that higher education category, you know, folks who, you know, taught law school at Harvard are not seen very well by folks who have not had that kind of a college education. And that's a gap.
But those people love a billionaire, though. They love a billionaire, though.
They think they do.
Well, they don't think. Well,
they're loving the image that is created. And part of the problem with Elizabeth Warren is that her image is policy wonk, which I appreciate. But if somebody who hasn't spent 6 years studying the policies doesn't understand what she's talking about, that's a problem.
All right. So Elizabeth Warren is the policy wonk. Bernie Sanders is the one trick pony in terms of its universal health care. What's the problem with him? He's just an angry old lefty.
Yes, I think he comes across very much that way. I think he is, he plays into a stereotype of the Northeastern old white man, quite frankly, and that's an appeal to some people, but I don't think he has been able to break through to others, largely because he hasn't made a good case for his other policies. And I think for some on the left, he's extreme. And then, of course, there's also questions about his previous positions on issues, which is a whole other story. Then you've got folks like Cory Booker, who is every bit as wonkish as anybody else on that Democratic stage. He's got plenty of years of connecting with voters, but for whatever reason, nobody's listening to him this time. And that's disappointing in terms of how voters are approaching the primaries.
Because potentially he's pretty centrist and somewhat exactly. tame in that regard. Emma, is this a generational vote, and how will the Tories under Johnson remodel the UK?
Well, Brexit is almost certainly going to happen now. I mean, 99.999% certain. It's just what form that takes, whether Johnson goes for his deal, which is probably what he'll do, get that through Parliament. That's quite a hard Brexit. The question then is that there is another cliff edge, because he said he'll do it in a year, and the deadline for that being obvious is next June. And if he doesn't take an extension, because actually you can't do a trade deal in a year, it's insane, then we may end up with an even harder no-deal Brexit, because he's made so many promises around that. And he apparently really hates the fact that he's a known liar, and you know, gets very cross about people saying that he lied with the bus and all of that. The bus that had £350 million a week to the NHS, which was just a brazen lie.
Just on that point, Emma, just on that point, isn't that one of the key things that the Labour Party needs to take away from this election and from the referendum? That the right wing have had very easily understandable slogans, whether you believe in them or not. That 360 odd million quid a week to the NHS was just very easy to understand. You vote this way, this is what's going to happen. To hell with actually whether it was achievable or not. And get Brexit done was just a very simple slogan to understand. And it has to be said, obviously I'm a Remainer, but even I'm getting tired of constantly, you know, people talking about bloody Brexit when you just thought, well, it kind of needs to happen in terms of just understanding the democratic process. And even if you didn't believe that, you just thought we need to break this logjam.
Yeah, I think a lot of people felt that way. The problem is there is no get Brexit done. You know, with the, whether we
listen, absolutely, but it was it's the sloganeering.
They are much better at sloganeering.
Make America great again.
Classic example, absolutely. The problem is, at the moment, the left aren't willing to be that calculating. Is probably the nicest way I can put it.
That savvy at marketing. Let's put it that way. We're not that savvy at marketing
and
our policies.
Until we either learn to do that or the electorate changes, and, you know, no party ever wins by trying to change the electorate rather than trying to change the way that they talk to the electorate.
I don't know about that. The Republicans in was it Georgia? With all their taking people voter rolls, they're trying to change the electorate.
Literally changing the electorate, I suppose. I mean changing the actual people rather than just telling them they can't vote.
No, sorry, I was being a smart ass. I got your point. What now for Momentum, that key component of Jeremy Corbyn's campaigning wing of the Labour Party, Emma?
It's a really good question. Will they get behind a candidate? If they consolidate behind a candidate, that candidate probably wins. Then, you can edit that out. I do apologise. I'm slightly cross today. nothing will change. And the Labour Party is basically dead and over. And I think that if the Momentum candidate wins, quite a lot of the PLP will just take their toys and go home and either set up a separate organisation and be, you know, the other Labour Party, or they'll just resign and just go and do something a lot more fun.
So Alan Johnson basically said they can F off with their student politics. Was he right then?
I mean, to be fair to Momentum, they did a lot right overall, like, their campaigning skills are formidable, absolutely formidable. But they are too purist in their politics. They ran the 2016 leadership contest as if it were a cult, and it was all about protect lovely Jeremy. And that has poisoned the Labour Party political space for 3 years now. And if they try to do that again with another candidate, I don't think it will work as well, but it will probably work enough to push that candidate over the top, as long as they promise to change absolutely nothing that has happened. And so much needs to change. I mean, not least, the first thing that's going to happen next year is the report of the EHRC onto institutional anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. That is going to be devastating. I mean, some of the evidence has been leaked, and it's just horrific. It is so difficult to read and know that you're in the same party as those people, and that those people think they share your values, and that just makes you question everything that you've given your life to. Sorry.
That's all right. That's all right. We need to end up on this. And very obviously, the Labour Party needs to remake itself, reshape itself, fundamentally from the ground up. It needs to not just be a metropolitan redoubt for people that like foreign language films. And the high arts, but then, yeah, exactly. And also, it needs to get out this strain of anti-Semitism out of the party. Who's going to be the leader that's going to be able to do that? I'm going to run through the obvious runners and riders, and you just give me a one-line answer. My poster boy, Keir Starmer.
Everyone's bloody poster boy, the mediocre white man. He's probably going to get it.
Rebecca Long-Bailey.
May well end up being the momentum candidate. If it's a Rebecca Long-Bailey versus Keir Starmer contest, that would probably go to Rebecca Long-Bailey, but Keir Starmer's probably the candidate most likely to keep it from her.
Fellow Brummie, Jess Phillips.
Is the one I think could do the job that's needed, which is, you know, fundamentally change the Labour Party, but also reconnect with the country.
Emily Thornberry.
Too harsh. You cannot transfer the leadership of the Labour Party from Islington North to Islington South. That just fundamentally would crystallise everything that people think is wrong with the Labour Party.
Lisa Nandy.
So clever, so brilliant, so in the right seat. I don't think she'll win the membership because the Remainers are cross with her. And the left across with her.
And lastly, but definitely not least, Yvette Cooper.
It's that generation that has to give up the coast now. It's got to be a new generation. There's one you haven't mentioned.
Who's that? Who have I missed out?
Angela Rayner, who's been talked about forever.
Oh, you know what? She's actually on the list. And I just skipped her after Jess Phillips. I do apologise. Tell me about Angela Rayner. What do we need to know?
I think Angela Rayner has the same qualities that Jess Phillips has, but is further to the left. So I think both of those could do that job that I'm talking about of both changing the party, but also connecting with the country. I think Keir Starmer can change the party and would do a very good technocratic job of that. But I don't know that he's the guy that can bring back Ashfield.
No, he's not going to excite people on the ground, no. Is he? But I think you're right. If anything, what you want is him as some kind of interim leader.
Yeah, the PLP do, yeah. just put him in as their interim leader and just say we're only listening to him from now on. I tell you what, I would like is perhaps a Jess Phillips, Angela Rayner leadership with a Keir Starmer deputy leadership role. And he does all the internal party stuff and they go out and talk to the heartlands.
Not that I know Angela Rayner and Angela Rayner that well, hence, and Rebecca Long-Bailey that well. But if we're looking at trying to combat what the Tories think that they have, which is somebody who connects with the average person, and what it seems like the election is telling us is that enough people like Boris Johnson that I think a politician who's very good at traditional retail politics, as the Americans would say, is exactly what's needed. Somebody who sounds like Britain. And I actually think that is Jess Phillips right now. She would be such a breath of fresh air on the British political scene. It's about time the Labour Party had a female leader. And then somebody with some nice flat vowels who doesn't sound like they've come from some finishing school and or isn't tainted by 70s, 80s radical politics. Yep. So the Daily Mail can just trash them all the time.
Yep.
There's somebody who sounds like they nip out to Tesco's and gets their shopping done.
Yeah.
And that is Jess Phillips.
100% agree. I mean, as I said, if both Jess and Ange could do that job, and I would be happy if either of them got it.
Well, let's see what twists and turns the Labour Party goes through in the preceding months, considering the Tories have a majority of some 80 seats in this historic and generation-defining election.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Moving swiftly on, let's go over to the United States of America and Donald Trump, our favorite orange-skinned president.
The resolution as amended is ordered reported favorably to the House. Members will have 2 days to submit views. The resolution will be reported as a single amendment in the nature of a substitute. Without objection, staff is authorized to make technical and conforming changes. Without objection,
Mr.
the committee
Chairman,
is adjourned.
Mr. Chairman.
And there you have it. History has been made. The House Judiciary Committee this morning voting along party lines, 23-17 in both instances, and the two articles impeachment against Donald Trump. There was some debate in this committee about how many articles to bring. They settled on 2. 9 pages, the original document, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress.
Trump is likely to become the third president to be impeached, but he probably won't leave office. Doug, why?
Because we have a fundamentally broken system on this side of the pond as well. It is discouraging to anybody who actually pays attention to what's going on in our government, and it bodes very badly for the future because the Republican Party, such as it is, appears to be committed to absolutely ignoring anything that possibly was done wrong by this president. And it's been bizarre watching and listening to the words of the lawmakers as they have debated the articles of impeachment, they're literally, it's not even a Rorschach test where people are seeing two different things. They're using entirely different sets of reality. And the result is that nobody trusts anybody. Most of the voters are tuned out because they're confused and they don't understand why this is important. And very few people are truly standing up for principle, and it's discouraging.
Isn't that the genius, though, of Trumpian politics? Is that doesn't matter what the evidence is, the absolute audio evidence. It doesn't matter what the experts say who've listened in on the call. It doesn't matter what the whistleblower says. It doesn't matter what independent counsel actually says. You just go deny, deny, deny. It was a perfect telephone call. And, you know, you'll eventually sow doubt in people's minds, if doubt was even there at the start.
It's the playbook that's been used in plenty of other historical episodes where you see people who, in many cases, are charismatic leaders who just make stuff up and say it enough times that it becomes the narrative. And I actually do fault my colleagues in the media for much of this, because so frequently, and we really saw this during the 2016 campaign, but it still continues today, where the president or one of his people will say something that is completely detached from facts. Yet the news media headlines focus on what was uttered and not what was fact. And I would prefer reporters to actually, and editors, to actually look at, okay, what is the substance here? And sure, quote the president saying something completely different, but let's focus on the facts, not the outrageous statements. But that, I mean, if you watched any of the Judiciary Committee debate or whatever that actually was, you saw Republican politician after Republican politician playing to their Fox News audience and trying to be outrageous so that they would be the 7-second clip on the news. And that's not the way to govern any country.
It's, I mean, without sounding like one of the absolute freaking nutters who are all over my timeline today, because I've happened to tell the truth, I do think the media have to ask themselves some very serious questions about how they cover politics. And perhaps they need a little less people like me who opine and a little more people like Doug who give facts. And I think, I mean, the BBC had a really, really tough election, frankly. And while they absolutely did not lose it for anybody, there is a wider question about the coziness between senior sources and senior journalists. There are questions about, as Doug says, you know, if what gets you on the news is being the worst person, because it's, we don't consider it news anymore, we consider it entertainment, then we cannot have a democracy. That's just not how democracy works. And, you know, that is a really fundamental question that needs to be both asked and answered by cleverer people than me.
What will it take, Doug, for there to be a charismatic dissenter on the Republican side, somebody who actually stands up and actually says, this president is broken? We're not talking about Mitt Romney. We're on about somebody who let's be stereotypical about it, your white Appalachian Republican voting American would actually turn around and say, hey, if they're questioning this president, maybe I should too. Or am I just whistling in the wind, considering that there is an election in just less than a year's time, and no one is going to put their head above the parapet?
As much as I think you're whistling in the wind, I hope and pray that somebody steps up who we don't know yet. Right now, on the Republican side, Justin Amash, the member of Congress who came out against Trump over the Russia, whatever you want to call it, was ousted from the party, basically. So the Republican Party is no longer the Republican Party that it always was. I mean, people have said this for the last 2 years, but now we really know that it's the Trump Party, and that anybody who has conservative ideals doesn't belong there, because Trump's policies are not conservative, except he's certainly packing the courts with conservative judges.
And that's why they forgive him everything, isn't it? It's all about the courts.
Exactly. And it's completely, it's greed. It's everything that the founding fathers of the United States fought against. And it's the undoing of our nation. I'm actually very pessimistic right now, and I'm usually an optimist. So
Well, Doug, come on. Let all three of us are down at the moment. And obviously what we need is time for reflection, right? But I always say, at least I always think, that left of center politics is fundamentally optimistic. It's always about hope. It's always about changing things and making things better for the majority, for people who are the downpressed and whatever. So, let's pick ourselves up off the floor, the pair of you, right? I'm being the headmaster now, right? Doug, what's going to happen next week in the House? Tell us quickly.
So the House Judiciary Committee has now passed the two articles of impeachment that will now go on to the House floor. They'll do some debate. By all expectations are that the House may very well vote by the end of next week. I know that we are going to see all kinds of parliamentary shenanigans and a lot of playing to the TV audience. I think that we should be watching Trump's Twitter feed, because he's clearly not doing anything else right now. He broke his own record for the most tweets in a day, and that's only going to get worse. And it's discouraging, but we've got to be paying attention.
I don't understand how he's got the time to do that. Doesn't he have a country to run and the West to lead or something or another? Has he got the time to do 137 tweets? Emma, when's the last time you had enough time in your day to send out 137 tweets?
Probably every day, to be fair. I'm never off Twitter.
Okay, when was the last time you actually sent out 137 tweets? Not that you had the time.
To be fair, I send a lot of tweets.
Okay, so I'm aiming this question at the wrong person.
I'm super online, and I need to sort that out a little bit, because it's not great for my mental health, to be honest. The mute button has had an awful lot of work over the last 24 hours. But the thing is, I'm not president of the United States. I'm a freelance journalist who doesn't get enough work in December. So I have the time, because I haven't got an article to write. I haven't got a contract to chase. I'd like to have less time to tweet. I don't feel it's right that these important people find time in their day to tweet so much. I don't like the people who just spend their entire time just going after each other, and I know I'm guilty of that, and I try not to be, but it's not always easy, particularly at moments like this when you just see people being so ridiculous. But my New Year's resolution should be to tweet less.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't it be nice if we all had that resolution a little bit? I mean, I know you don't need it, Royfield. You only go on there to talk about the Archers.
Well, I actually did have a little bit of a bitch and a moan, actually, about the election when I saw that exit poll yesterday. So there were three political tweets from me, and then I just thought, you know what, I'm getting out of this. And I went and had a nice meal with a friend. So let's end up, because that sounded suspiciously like your takeaway of the week. That sounded somewhat semi-philosophical.
Yeah, I think let's given that everything else is smashed to bits.
let's round this up. And Doug, I'm just going to come out with a statement by a Washington Democrat, which is any one of my colleagues willing to say that it is ever okay for a president of the United States of America to invite foreign interference in our elections? And I just think that really fundamentally sums it up. We heard the recording. There is no other way to spin it. Senior diplomats have said this is totally unprecedented. It is unprecedented. It's utterly shocking that the party of the nation, of a loyalty, of the flag that rallies around it, can have such a venal charlatan as its leader and be slavish in its devotion to him. That's a statement from me. You end up by saying whatever you want to say, Doug, and then we'll go on to our takeaways of the last 7 days.
I think that you've got it exactly right. We really are at a point where we expect our elected officials to step out of their campaign mode and be leaders. And being leaders sometimes means casting a vote that might not get you reelected. In the past, that used to be the way politicians behaved. And we have a president who began his reelection campaign literally the day he took office. And he has conducted every single day in the Oval Office as if it is a nonstop campaign. And the politicians subordinate to the president have followed the same thing. So nonstop campaign and never govern is a problem. We've got to fix it.
You know, just on the utterly last note, being British and then looking at the whole American system, you realize that the constant campaigning is utterly put there to stop the governing of America. You know, this whole every 2 years there is an election and you can even elect a judge or the town dog catcher. It's completely to stop anything fundamentally ever being done. And we talk about the wisdom of the founding fathers, but this is definitely something which they designed and put in place so that it feels like it's constant accountability. But actually what it is constantly having to suck up to vested interests and to people with large checks to run your campaign and then to be in hock to them post the election if you ever get in. But anyway, moving swiftly on, let's be positive. Let's have our takeaways of the last 7 days. It's that time when we need to be positive. And if ever we needed to be positive, it was after the results of the 2019 British election. So I'm going to leave you last, Emma, because I know you're still licking your wounds and you've been doing media appearances and trying to explain what exactly has happened. So, Doug, you're our sunny person. You're the person who's going to pick everybody up off the floor. Hit us with your take over the last 7 days, sir.
I am so excited that I don't want to give too much of a shout out to a commercial entity, but many of us have Amazon devices that have the voice assistant Alexa in our homes or our cars, and we finally can have an alternate voice. Amazon is now opening up Alexa to certain celebrities. So you can now pay a little bit of money and have Samuel L. Jackson on your Alexa. I'm so happy about that. That's going to be so much fun, and I can't wait to see who else becomes available.
There was one thing that you could get in Britain where you could text a number and it would read your text in the voice of Tom Baker, the Fourth Doctor. And that was great fun.
I love this.
And always for me, the Doctor, Tom Baker. He's the Doctor of my childhood. Though I do remember John Pertwee.
I was Baker, Peter Davison crossover. And I've got a very, very soft spot for Peter Davison. And then when David Tennant, who was my latter period Doctor, said to Peter Davison, "You're my Doctor," and then married his daughter, but that's a whole other thing. It really got to me.
So my Google Maps has the voice of a UK person. And of course, I forget it as I travel. And then people go, goodness, you know, all your apps sound posh. When I'm in America and I'm like, what? Oh, yeah. You know, and the whole kind of British accent thing. When I'm over here, people think that I'm smarter than I really am because of this fixation.
I did have someone in a New York bar that I was 42nd in line for the throne, which in my little London is a bit unlikely.
All right, Emma, you're laughing now, so you seem a little bit more chipper. So give us your take over the last 7 days.
Well, I am leaving this podcast, not permanently, just today, to go and volunteer for the Walthamstow Borough of Culture. Our year of being the Borough of Culture is coming to an end. And so my takeaway is two things. One, the absolute joy and community that culture brings us. Walthamstow is a really strong community. We really care about where we live. People call it Awesomestow and nobody giggles at that because we actually love where we live. And part of that is that we have this incredibly strong sense of culture. I went for a walk the other day with a friend and we just noticed there were about 20 murals just randomly scattered throughout the borough, you know, not really commented on, but they're just there. And that's Walthamstow all over. Everywhere you look, there's something. And then the other thing is the sense that volunteering can bring to you. It just, you know, when things are as dark as they are now, the fact that I'm going to go and volunteer with someone I met through this volunteering scheme, who's a Tory, and we get on like a house on fire. And actually, at the end of the day, that matters. So I think it's about just finding a way to give back, even when it's the hardest time of your life. That's my takeaway of the week.
No. My takeaway is just that I have a wonderful set of friends who I do call family in the United States. Very obviously, I have my family. My mum and dad live in the UK, in Birmingham. One daughter lives in London. Two of my kids live in Toronto. But I've had a very special week. It was my birthday on Monday.
Oh, happy birthday.
And it started off by... Thank you, thank you. I had a bit of a work do and then met some friends last Friday. Work do in that I am a member of the American Independent Radio Producers organization and met with some of them. And then Doug and some other friends came along and it was really nice to see Doug in the flesh, considering we've been talking via this medium for off and on for about 3 years now. But then I just have a wonderful adopted American family. So Vesna and Mia took me out for dinner on Monday. I also had breakfast and cake. Jen and I watched The Crown on Tuesday with pizza. And then Jeannie took me out to the Burma Star in Oakland for a lovely meal yesterday. And then just in between, people have sent me cards and just said, do you want to do something? Do you want to hang out? And I'm just utterly blessed to have a group of people that even when I am literally 8,000 miles away from the place where I grew up, I still feel that I'm around people that love, care for me, and want to spend time with me. So America and friends is my takeaway of the week, that it doesn't matter wherever you are. You know, there are people that still care for you and look out for you. So thank you to my friends for all the kindness and the loveliness that you've shown me in the last week. Emma, let's go to you. How can people find you on the socials, even though you need to cut it down?
I'm Emma Burnell _ on Twitter.
Smashing. Doug, how about you? And tell us about a wine we should be imbibing over the weekend.
Ooh, that's a tough call. There's so many good wines. I highly recommend the Bubbly from Cartograph Cellars in Sonoma. Has been getting some very deserved attention, and that would probably be my pick. And this is the holiday season, so Bubbly is always a good idea. And folks can find me on Twitter. I am at SFDoug.
And you can find me on Twitter if you want badly spelt, grammatically incorrect tweets, fundamentally really about the Archers or about what I'm doing today as opposed to politics, by simply going onto Twitter and typing in Royfield, which is R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D. And then also, we implore you to go on to SpeakPipe on midatlanticshow.com and to hit that SpeakPipe tab and to answer any of the points which any three of us have actually made on this week's episode. And especially if you are happy that the Tory party have romped home to an 80-seat majority, definitely would like you to call in and explain why, and why you think this is the right path for Britain going forward. So if you are a right voting citizen of the United Kingdom, please call in and let's have a conversation, let's have a debate about that on the next episode of Mid-Atlantic. That's been us licking our wounds, but always being positive. The Labour Party is going to remodel itself. Jess Phillips is going to be its next leader. You heard it here first. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.